Sakrachyam Chaganirottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Canto 2, Chapter 1, Chapter entitled The First Step in God Realization, text number 2. Shrotavya Dini Rajendra. Rinamsanti Sahasrashah. Apashyatam Atma Tatvam. Griheshu Griha Medinam. Shrotavya Dini Rajendra. Rinamsanti Sahasrashah. Apashyantam Atma Tatvam. Griheshu Griha Medinam. Shrotavya Dini Rajendra. Rinamsanti Sahasrashah. Apashyatam Atma Tatvam. Griheshu Griha Medinam. Shrotavya Adini. Subject matters are hearing.
Rajendra.
O Emperor.
Rinam.
Of human society.
Santi.
There are. Sahasrasha. Hundreds and thousands. Apashyatam.
Of the blind.
Atma Tatvam.
Knowledge of the self.
The ultimate truth.
Griheshu.
At home.
Grihamedinam.
Of persons too materially engrossed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, have many subjects for hearing in human society, O Emperor. Translation responsibly. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. Purport. In the revealed scriptures, there are two nomenclatures for the householder's life. One is Grihastha, and the other is Grihamedi. The Grihasthas are those who live together with wife and children, but live transcendentally for realizing the ultimate truth. The Grihamedis, however, are those who live only for the benefit of the family members, extended or centralized, and thus are envious of others. The word Medhi indicates jealousy of others. The Grihamedis, being interested in family affairs only, are certainly envious of others. Therefore, one Grihamedi is not on good terms with another Grihamedi, and in the extended form, one community, society, or nation is not on good terms with another counterpart of selfish interest. In the age of Kali, all the householders are jealous of one another because they are blind of the knowledge of ultimate truth. They have many subject matters for hearing, political, scientific, social, economic, and so on. But due to a poor fund of knowledge, they set aside the question of the ultimate miseries of life, namely miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. Factually, the human life is meant for making an ultimate solution to birth, death, old age, and disease. But the Grihamedis, being illusioned by their material nature, forget everything about self-realization. The ultimate solution to the problems of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. And thus, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, 8.16, the miseries of material existence, birth, death, old age and disease are removed. The process of going back home, back to Godhead, is to hear about the Supreme Lord and His name, form, attributes, pastimes, paraphernalia and variegatedness. Foolish people do not know this. They want to hear something about the name, form, etc. of everything temporary, and they do not know how to utilize this propensity of hearing for the ultimate good. Misguided as they are, they also create some false literatures about the name, form, attributes, etc. of the ultimate truth. One should not, therefore, become a Grihamedi simply to exist for envying others. One should become a real householder in terms of the scriptural injunctions. Namagyan Timurandasya Ginunjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Manitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swadanantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripasandubhyaya Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gauravadavanda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Rama Hare Hare. So today is the Purnima. Purnima is extremely auspicious. Means the moon and the sun are directly opposite each other. That's why it is, the moon is full in its Purnima, because the moon reflects, in one sense, the light of the sun, or shows the position of the sun. So Amavashya, when the moon is dark, it means the sun and the moon are very close in the same zodiac sign. And when they're completely opposite, that day, Purnima, Baladev Purnima, and Gaura Purnima, those days where the moon and the sun are directly opposite, is very powerful, because their energies are directly contacting each other. So it's a very powerful day. And it is the first day of the Chaturmasya. It means 4 days, sorry, 4 months of the rainy season. In India, generally, it becomes rainy and muddy at this time. So it is called Chaturmasya, 4 months. And traditionally, people will perform tapasya, or austerity, during this time. Tapo divyam. In order to make spiritual advancement or progress in spiritual life, you have to perform austerity. Human life is meant for austerity. Austerity is unavoidable. You see everyone is doing austerity. Just like, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, you go over to the Westgate Freeway, Princess Highway, on the Westgate Bridge. There's a traffic jam which is going for about 10 kilometres, 12 kilometres or further. That's austerity. People are doing austerity. You know, everyone in human society has to do austerity. But the austerity is not leading to anything. That is the point. So in Chaturmasya, for these 4 months, this is the time when the demigods take rest. In Swaga, on the higher planets, 6 months down here on Earth is 1 day up there. So for 4 months, which begins today, all the demigods are taking rest. So therefore, in the Vedic civilization, there is not so much sacrifice offered during this 4 month period. Traditionally, you'll see, they do less sacrifice during this period. Just like they don't do so many marriages during this period, because the demigods are not awake. Everyone wants the blessings of the demigods, so you know they're not awake, so they won't do. So you see, generally in India, As soon as the Chaturmasya finishes, the last day of Kartik, the day after, then all the weddings begin. Usually we're in Vrindavan at that time, and then it's hard to sleep for the next few days when Kartik finishes, because everyone starts having weddings. And weddings, anything in India these days means you just turn up the volume of all the sound systems. And if you want to celebrate something, you just turn up the speakers up to full volume so that they're feeding back and making too much noise, and then that's a celebration like that. Let everyone in the countryside know that you're also doing the celebration. So for 4 months there will be, beginning today, there will be austerity. So generally the sages, because traditionally in the Vedic civilization people would travel by foot. These days we have motor vehicles, so we travel very quickly. You know, if you want to go to one place, you just get in a plane, or you get in a train, or you get in a bus, or you get in a car. But previously, people would walk by foot. And because it begins to rain at this time, the sages who were travelling around to different holy places, they would stop for these 4 months while it rains, and they would just sit down and do some austerity. They would just do tapasya for these 4 months. And they would absorb themselves in spiritual progress, to make spiritual progress. That is the purpose of us, of our doing austerity. Why do we do austerity in Krishna consciousness? Because we have to do some austerity in Krishna consciousness. Why do we do austerity? To bring us closer to Krishna. If you're doing your austerity, but you're not coming closer to Krishna, and Bhagavatam says, Shrama evihi kevalam, it's useless. You're just wasting your time. You're doing so much effort, but you're not coming closer to Krishna, then what's the point? You're not achieving anything. Or as the Bhagavatam says in the 10th canto, it says that just like you're beating empty husk of rice, just like they remove the husk of the rice, what we call brown rice, they smash the husk, so we get the white rice, or just the inner part of the rice. So you're beating and beating and beating, but someone's already done that. Someone's already beat it, and you've just got the husk left. So you come and you beat and you beat and you beat, but you're not doing anything. Then nothing, it's already done. So you're just wasting energy. So this is what happens. If we do austerity but we don't achieve Krishna, then what's the point? What did you achieve? You achieved nothing. So the whole point about doing austerity in spiritual life is so that we achieve Krishna, we get closer to Krishna. So now, for 4 months, traditionally the sages, they would stay in one place and they would do austerity. Now part of the austerity is that they would give up certain things. So they stop eating certain things. And they do different tapasyas for 4 months. Devotees will do that in India, in Vrindavan. Many devotees do that. They don't shave for 4 months. They sometimes only eat once a day. They do all sorts of austerities like that. So Srila Prabhupada, being the founder acharya, the Yuga acharya, the acharya for the next 10,000 years, he understands that the people in Kali Yuga, they don't have qualification to do austerity. Just like I was telling on Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja day last year, Tamal Krishna Maharaj had a dream, and in the dream he saw Srila Prabhupada was giving a report to the previous acharyas. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gorkhashodas Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Manan Thakur, Jagannathas Babaji Maharaj, previous acharyas there. And Prabhupada was giving a report, and they said, how is the preaching going on earth? And Srila Prabhupada said to the previous acharyas, he said, the people at this point in time in Kali Yuga, they are not so inclined to do austerity, not so inclined to do jagya, not so inclined to study the Vedas. In other words, they don't have qualification. But he said they have one good quality. Their one good quality is they are attached to my lotus feet. So that is our only good quality. We're not good at, basically if you look at us, we're not very good at doing most of the things we do every day. We find it hard to even stay awake while we're chanting our japa. What does it say in Bhagavad Gita? Krishna says, if sacrifices, I am japa. What's the greatest Vedic jug you can do? It is japa. And when we do our japa, half the time we're falling asleep. Or we can't even concentrate. We have to walk around and read everything on the notice board and all the posters in the temple while we're doing our japa. You know, quite often our japa is not of a high quality. We find it hard to stay asleep, awake in class, Bhagavatam class. Yeah, very difficult for us. So Prabhupada says one good quality that they have, they can't do so many things, but one good thing, they're attached to my lotus feet. So Tamal Krishnamurti had this dream, and then he woke up, and Prabhupada was sitting next to him. He was in the hospital at the time. He had a hernia, I think it was, hernia operation. So he had an operation. Prabhupada was there when he woke up. And then he said to Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, I just had a dream. Prabhupada said, what was the dream? So he told Prabhupada the dream. And he said, you know, you said to the previous acharyas that the only good quality is the people having Kali Yuga is that they are attached to your lotus feet. And Prabhupada said, actually it is a fact. Actually it is a fact. We don't have such. So we're not so good at doing austerity. So Srila Prabhupada made it easy for us. So now, Chatamasya. Chatamasya means there's so many rules, so many regulations, so many things, vidhi, nisheda, so many things you should do and should not do for 4 months. But Prabhupada said, okay, first month of Chatamasya, don't eat spinach. It means green, leafy vegetables. Right? Sometimes devotees say, okay, it says spinach, not silver beet. You know, devotees start doing all these things. You know, we're not being asked to do much, and devotees can't even do what we're asked to do. It means green leafy vegetables. If something's green and it's leafy, don't eat it for a month. You know, will it kill you? You know, it's not so difficult. Do some austerity, a little bit of austerity. Second month, no yogurt. So then devotees, they get yogurt, they mix it with water, they make lassi, and they say, it's not yogurt anymore. It's lassi. So the devotees get yogurt, and they mix mango in it, and they say, it's not yogurt anymore. It's shrikhand. Or something. Just do some austerity. You know, lassi is yogurt. Hare Baba, it's yogurt. It's yogurt. Just do some austerity, just for 1 month. Yeah, it's not so difficult. Prabhupada's not asking us to do much. Prabhupada actually said one time, he said, these are rules. Right? He said, they are small rules. But if you do not follow them, where is the proof that you love Krishna? We're not being asked to do much. This is the point. Prabhupada has lowered the standard as low as he can lower it. I was listening yesterday, my spiritual master was giving a lecture. You know, when Prabhupada first came to the West, he said 64 rounds. He said to Mukunda Maharaj, who's living up on New Govardhan, now he lives here in Australia, you know, one of Prabhupada's first disciples. So Prabhupada said, I want you to chant 64 rounds a day. And Mukunda Maharaj just looked at Prabhupada. Just looked at him. He just, you know, and Prabhupada understood, okay, this is too difficult. So Prabhupada said, okay, 32. Mukunda Maharaj just looked at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said 16 minimum. So he's lowered it as much as he can. Four regular principles, right? 16 rounds, right? Follow a Kodashi properly, right? And in Chatamasya, no green leafy vegetables, then no yogurt, then no milk, right? Third month, no milk. That means milk shakes as well. And devotees try to, you know, cut corners any way they can. And fourth month is no urad dal. Urad dal means we used to make most of the South Indian dishes. Uttapam, idli, dosha, most of the stuff. I remember I was with my spiritual master in 2001, not long before he left this world. We were having breakfast together. I was staying with him in Oxford in England. And we're having uttapam for breakfast. Uttapam. Uttapam is a South Indian pancake, savoury pancake, like thick. I mean, these are incredible. You know. They're like, they're nectarian. If someone knows how to make them really well, they're out of this world. So then he said to me, he said, you know, I think it was the day before Kartik or something. So then he said, okay, he goes, tomorrow we can't have uttapams anymore. And I kind of wasn't conscious at that time that urad dal is in uttapam. And then I was just about to go to India. And one of the things I go to India for is to have uttapam. You know, it's Jagannath Puri. We used to have uttapam for breakfast in Kartik. It's really good uttapams. You know, too good. You know, I tell you, too good. Really nice uttapam. So he said to me, okay, tomorrow we kind of look fine. I just looked at him. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. And my world just kind of changed, adjusted. And then I had to make a decision in my mind. And he was looking at my face. He was seeing what was going on in my, my whole world was just like shifting around. Now I can't eat uttapas during Kartik. I had to do one because I didn't realize I've been eating, though I didn't realize that dal was in the uttapas. Yeah. Generally, we don't eat the papadams. Papadams are made from urad dal, so you don't eat them in Kartik in that month. So any of these. So then, he was watching me, I was watching him, and I was making a decision in my mind, in those few moments. Do I follow the order of the spiritual master, or do I enjoy my senses? What I live for in this material world. Because, devotees, we do so much austerity, so we need some sense gratification. Our sense gratification is prasadam. And, now I can't have this. But then I understood, no, if I want to get to Krishna, I have to please my spiritual master. And my spiritual master, he does not want me to. He has instructed me not to eat uttapas during this period. So you do some austerity. So every year I try to go to India during this time. And it's a big austerity for me not to have uttapas. Because you can get fantastic, uttapas, like authentic, really nice ones, but I can't eat them. So it's an austerity. But we do that austerity for the pleasure of Guru, for the pleasure of Krishna. We get closer to Krishna. This is the point of spiritual life. You have to make sacrifice. If you want to get to Krishna, you have to sacrifice. You have to be willing to give up things which normally you do not want to give up for the pleasure of Krishna. You don't want to get up early in the morning. It's winter. Right? It's cold. We don't want to get out of bed. Sometimes you wake up in winter. You don't want to get out of bed. It's freezing. Now, do you ever feel like that? Wow. So advanced. Such advanced devotees. Well, Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter in the purports, Prabhupada says, it's so hot in the kitchen in summertime, but the women still go into the kitchen to cook for the family. They do austerity, tapasya. So to get to Krishna, we have to do tapasya. You have to do austerity for his pleasure. Is it pleasing him? That's the point. So today is the first day of Chaturmasya. So we have to follow these things. Okay, so we just started the second canto of the Bhagavatam. Yesterday we started. Yesterday was the first verse. Someone spoke. So it is very auspicious. This is the third time now that we're going through the Bhagavatam in the history of this temple. Third time around. Bhagavatam classes probably started in the 70s. When I joined the temple in 1989, then we were in the 11th canto. That was the first time they were going through. It takes about 20 years to go through each time. And then we just finished going through it a second time. Now we're on the third lap, going through again the Bhagavatam. So it is very auspicious when we finish a canto or begin a new canto. It is extremely auspicious. So now we're beginning the second canto. And the second canto, the first three chapters, are extremely instructive and nectarian. Some of my favorite sections of the Bhagavatam are in the very beginning of this second canto. These verses are extremely powerful. And Prabhupada, he would often quote these verses in the opening of the second canto. These are famous verses like this. So this particular verse is saying that there are two types of householders. There is Grihastha and there is Grihamehi. Griha means home. Most people on the earth planet, they will be Grihastha. Grihastha means they will have home and family. Some will not. Some are renunciates by adhika or qualification. It means in their previous life they have practiced renunciation, and in this life they have no necessity or desire in the heart to live with family and to have a home, to possess things. These desires have been given up. But most people in this world, they need home, they need family. It's material desires. It's not spiritual desire, nothing to do with Krishna. It's a material desire. It's our own desire like that. But we have these desires in this material world. So Krishna gives us facility. Okay, here's a license. You want wife, you want children, you want home, you want car, you want helicopter, you want all these things. Here, I give it to you. You can have it. So people have this griha. Griha means home. So there are two types of grihastha or grihameti, two types of householder. Grihameti means, meti means the center. The griha becomes the center of one's consciousness or existence. It becomes everything. Just like you'll see when the bullocks in India, you'll see the traditional system. Sometimes they'll tie the bullocks to the meti, to the grinding mortar. Now you might have seen the bullocks, they go around and they drag the, like the meti means in the center. That center is called the meti, or the pivot, like that. And you put the grains in there, and then the bulls will turn the meti, the big device, and it will crush the grains, like that. So the meti is the center. So griha meti means this is the center of your existence. Your whole life is just your wife. My wife is my life. This is the consciousness of the griha meti. They think like this. And the husband is my wife. You know, all the brahmacharinis think, if I just had a husband, I'd be so happy. And the brahmacharis think, if I just had a wife, I'd be so happy. And then you get married. And then you think, if I was just not married, I'd be so happy. So the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. This is called illusion, or maya, that which is not. Maya means you think there is happiness where there is not. So we all look on the other side of the fence and go, oh, it's better over there. So we all jump on the other side of the fence, throw your banana in the fire, swaha, jump on the other side of the fence. And then, oh, now I'll be happy. And then once you're in that side of the fence, you think, what in the hell did I do? I was so happy back then. Like that. So this is material life. Like that. So, griha medi, it means your wife is your life. Interesting, because the fourth verse, which will come in 2 days' time, Deha pacha kalatradi shu atmasaya. It explains this point very deeply and elaborately. Very powerful verses. So then, the wife, from the wife comes children, right? And then you have your children, and this becomes the center of your existence. Like that. And basically, you see, grihastha life is about raising children. That is the center. Then it becomes everything. It becomes all consuming, all devouring. You don't have much time for anything else like that. Now, in material life, that becomes the all-in-all. In spiritual life, it is also the all-in-all. Prabhupada instructed us, when one of the grihasthas was getting up early in the morning to go to the temple to worship the deity, right, and the child was at home, Prabhupada said, no, the child is your deity. You look after the children, that is your first responsibility. Right? Others will worship the deity in the temple. But if you have young children, they are your responsibility. Right? The children are your first responsibility in grihastha life. Prabhupada said they are Vaikuntha children. They're not ordinary children. They've been given to you as a service to raise them. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says this. He says, I am just the guardian of my ashram. But my wife, my children, they have all been sent by you, Krishna, and I am meant to look after them on your behalf. I'm simply the servant in this home. So this should be the mentality of the devotees. Like that. Don't neglect. Don't think you're advanced and spiritual if you become detached from your family, neglectful from your family. No, your family are devotees, and you see them as such, and you treat them as such, and you serve them. Like that. That is your first service as a grihastha. That's the difference between grihastha life and grihameti life. Grihameti means it's all material. Right? It's just material absorption in the children. No, but if you're helping the children become Krishna conscious, that liberates you. That takes you out of the material world. Just like they give the example of the thorn. If I have a thorn stuck in my hand, a splinter or a thorn stuck in my hand, I take another thorn to pull it out. So the thing that was causing my suffering, the same thing can take away your suffering. So in spiritual life, I can suffer from being in householder life, or householder life can liberate me out of this material world. If you keep Krishna in the center. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in Kali Yuga, Grihastha Ashram is a very good place for a Vaishnava to be. Very good to be married in Kali Yuga. There's the sure way and there is the safe way. Now, the sure way is renunciation. brahmachari sannyas, that is sure that you'll go back to Godhead. But it's hard to do in Kali Yuga. So the safe way is that you go through grihastha life, which means a lot of responsibility, a lot of interaction with the material energy, a lot of difficulty, a lot of austerity, but safely and gradually you'll go back to the spiritual world. That thing which can bind you to this world can also take you out of this world. So here it is being said that there is a griha meti life, where the griha becomes the center of your existence. Griha meti, it is the center, it's my everything. This is maya, this is illusion. Now the other type of ashram is called grihastha. Now what does grihastha ashram mean? Ashraya. Ashraya means? Shelter. Like that. An ashram is a shelter. I became a grihastha, I've been a devotee for a number of years, and I was brahmachari for about 8 years, and then I've been grihastha for about 16 years, I think. So most of my time of being a devotee has been as a grihastha. But grihastha ashram does not slow down your spiritual progress or advancement, if you're serious. Because what is the process? How do we advance in Krishna consciousness? Hands up if you want to become an advanced devotee. Okay, so what is the process? Very good, hearing and chanting. That's what these verses right here. Shrota vadini. Shrota. Shrota means shruta. Shrota. Shruti. Shrota. These basic words, shravanam. That's coming from the root cause. This is referring to hearing about Krishna. So the process is the same. Whether you're renounced as a brahmachari, brahmacharini, whether you're a sannyasi, or whether you're a grihastha, the process of God realization or Krishna consciousness, how do we become advanced? It's by chanting and hearing about Krishna. Now, as a grihastha, I was a brahmachari for a number of years. As a brahmachari, I chanted some very good rounds while I was a brahmachari. I remember chanting sometimes just being in ecstasy while chanting. Right? And as a grihastha, I've also done the same thing. I've actually chanted better rounds. Because as you're progressing in Krishna consciousness, your chanting should be becoming better. So it's not a disadvantage to be in the grihastha ashram if you are sufficiently hearing and chanting about Krishna. It just means that you're in a situation which is safe for you and which is allowing you to progress peacefully in Krishna consciousness, or unpeacefully. There's no guarantee. Marriage doesn't solve all the problems like that. And being a renunciant doesn't solve all the problems either like that. Material world will just give you problems. Material world is just, it's mystical. Yeah? Krishna says, Mama Maya Durachaya. My Maya. Look at this. My Maya. It's mystical. How it gives you problems, it's just mystical. I just sit back and watch sometimes my life and I just think, how does I just say to Krishna, you are brilliant. You are a genius. How you created something which can just give so many problems. So easily. I just have to sit back and they just come. I just wake up these days after being in this material world for a number of years, you just wake up in the morning and just think, what's going to come today? You just wake up and what's next? Material energy just brings it to you. That is the nature of the material world. So, whichever ashram you're in, that is not so important in one sense. You should just be in the ashram which is best for you as an individual, according to your adhika or your psychophysical makeup, your guna, your qualities, your particular personality, your character. You should just be in the ashram which is best for you to advance in Krishna consciousness according to your nature. And then you should be serious and you should make spiritual advancement. And then if you are well situated, and Prabhupada explains this in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, in the story of Gajendra. Gajendra is in the water fighting a crocodile. He's an elephant, king of the elephants, and he was losing the battle. So Prabhupada uses the analogy. Why was he losing? Because he wasn't in his atmosphere, the proper situation. And at that time, one of Prabhupada's sannyas disciples left his sannyas ashram. So then Prabhupada writes in the purport about this indirectly. He doesn't mention the name of the devotee he's mentioned. So then Prabhupada, he said, okay, if you cannot maintain brahmachari sannyas in Kali Yuga, which is very difficult, then you go to Grihastha Ashram. Even Prabhupada, he would, if his sannyasis could not maintain their vows, then he would marry them. Now you see Bali Madan Prabhu, if you see there's a video, you can see if you watch the documentaries about Prabhupada, he was a sannyasi, and then he was preaching to one Mataji in Japan, I think it was, and he became attached to her, and then he had to marry her. So then Prabhupada performed the yajna. Prabhupada didn't reject him. Oh, you know, now you're fallen, you're eating your own vomit. You know, because it says that a sannyasi gets, you know, renounces and then goes back and gets married again. He's a vomit eater. You know, when you vomit, you bring it all up. Right? Alright, that's it, it's all gone now. I've got that out of my system. Right? I don't need to be married anymore. I've renounced it. And then you go back and start eating again. It's like, you know, that's what it compares it to. The Shastra says if you're sannyas and you go back and become married again, you eat your own vomit. But Prabhupada, he said, no, better that you practice Krishna consciousness. You just be peaceful. You get married. And Prabhupada married them. You see the yogi, he marries them. You see, Prabhupada's mood was very sweet. He was more concerned that we become Krishna conscious more than anything else. So we just have to land ourselves and base ourselves in the right ashram for us, according to our nature. It's not a big deal. If you can be brahmachari, by all means do it. Because Prabhupada says brahmachari life is the best. You know, I used to be a brahmachari. It's the best days of your life. Now you look back at it and you just think that they were the best days. Everything was simple then. And then grihastha life is there. So what's the problem? You're a grihastha now, so just get on with the job. You've got a wife, you've got kids, you've got a home, you've got a car, you've got a, you know, whatever you've got. You know, just get on with the job. Become Krishna conscious. That is the point of life. Don't waste your time. So the Bhagavatam is saying here, Prabhupada is saying, the process of going back to Godhead is to hear about the name, form, attributes, pastimes, paraphernalia, and variegatedness of Krishna. This is the whole point of the Bhagavatam. This is the process of liberation. For everyone in Kali Yuga, hear about Krishna. Every day, we should be hearing about Krishna. And then gradually, over time, we're meant to hear directly about Krishna. You see, 1970, the very beginning of our movement, because Prabhupada did not know how long he would live. 65, he has two heart attacks. 67, he has a stroke. He didn't know how long he had to live. So he gave us Krishna book, a summary study of the 10th canto from the very beginning. Because he wanted us to hear about Krishna. So eventually, this is the whole point, this is why we studied the Bhagavatam, one canto, second canto, third. You know, and if you stick to the Bhagavatam class another 8 years or so, or 10 years, or longer, however long it'll take, we'll get to the 10th canto. And this is the Samambonam, the Ashraya. There are 10 subject matters of the Bhagavatam. The Ashraya is Krishna. It is the 10th canto. We're meant to hear about Krishna. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 12th chapter in his purport, he says that because we are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we're followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada says we should fix our mind only on Krishna. He says we should not even divert our thoughts to other forms of the Lord. Prabhupada says that. No? Don't even divert your mind to any other thought of the Lord. And which form of Krishna do we worship? Rajendra Nandana. The form of Krishna in Vrindavan. You see, Prabhupada established Krishna all over the world, here in Melbourne, so far away from India. Prabhupada installed Radha Vallabha. These are Vrindavan deities. We're meant to fix our mind on Vrindavan. This is the whole point of our Krishna consciousness movement. And eventually, you have to absorb your mind in Krishna's pastimes, especially in Vrindavan. This is what we're meant to be doing as devotees. And Jagatarini Mataji, she explained last couple of years in one of the retreats that I went to in Govinda. She explained to us, and actually it's based on the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam says this itself. The only way you can give up your frit rog, or your lust within your heart, the lust of desires in your heart, is by becoming attached to Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So we do all this hearing and chanting, we study the Bhagavad Gita, we get our Bhakti Shastri degree, we study the Bhagavad Gita very carefully. It's all leading us to the 10th canto. So that eventually we can just absorb our consciousness in what it's like in the spiritual world. And at the time of death, if you are absorbed in the spiritual world, you will be transported to the spiritual world. But at the time of death, if you're thinking of something in this world, then you'll take birth again. Whatever you're attached to, yam yam, bhavisma, rambhavam, Krishna says, whatever you're attached to, you'll go there. If you're attached to me, I'll bring you. Right? And if you're attached to something else, then we can facilitate that also. So it is up to us. But sooner or later, we have to become attached to Krishna's pastimes. And Krishna's pastimes are nectarian. I got this new book by Shivaram Swami, Nava Braja Mahima. It is about the new Vrindavan, the farm that he has over there, and he's done a parikram, he's written 9 books, just about all the pastimes of Krishna as you go on parikram through New Brajdham, his farm in Hungary, and the pastimes are unbelievable. I've been hearing Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan for many, many years, but some of these things I've never heard these details before. Krishna's pastimes are unbelievable. Unbelievable. We should absorb ourselves in Krishna. That is our only hope. And Krishna says, at the time of death, if you remember me, you will come to me. But to remember someone, you have to hear about them all the time. You have to think about them all the time. Manmana Baba Madbhakto. Krishna says, always think of me. How are you going to always think of Krishna unless you're hearing about him all the time? So eventually we have to raise our consciousness where we have no other desire than just to hear about Krishna. So that at the time of death we can go back to him. This is the message of the Bhagavatam. Ante Narayana Smriti. Bhagavatam says, Ante, at the end, Narayana Smriti. You should be remembering Krishna. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we discussed.
The life of the family, can you have that and then have the life of the devotee?
Yeah. That's what everyone here is doing. That's what we're all doing. We're devotees, we've got families.
Even if your children, they've grown up, they still need you?
Yeah, of course. Of course. You can do everything. You look at all the personalities on the back wall, right? Two of them were renunciates and two of them were householders who became renunciates. Prabhupada had many children and was a very successful businessman. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is on the furthest on our right there, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a high court judge. He was a district magistrate, very highly positioned. He was actually the most highly positioned Indian in the British Raj, in the British government. Very highly positioned person. Yeah, had a huge responsibility. He's a high court judge, so he had a huge responsibility. He had 10 or 12 children. Right? But he did everything. He was Krishna conscious. Like that. So yeah, everything's possible. Any other questions? Comment?
Why is that?
Because if you give something up for someone, they feel very indebted to you. So when Krishna sees you're giving something up for him, he becomes very indebted. And it says in Kartik, which is the fourth of the Chaturmasya months, so we have 3 months to get ourselves ready for Kartik. It says that one of the Kartik brats that you can take, you don't have to, but you can take, is that you can give up a favourite food item for Krishna. I remember when I was a brahmachari about 20 years ago then, for one Kartik we didn't eat sweets for the whole Kartik, which for me was a great austerity. Big austerity. That was not so easy in some ways, especially in Govardhan Puja. I didn't take that brat again. I did it once, but I didn't do it again because then I thought it's too austere. But if you can do it, then I had dinner during that month. There's one of my friends, she was my friend before I became a devotee. We were like best friends. And then I became a devotee and she used to come and visit me sometimes, and we're very close friends. We don't see each other so much now, but we're very close friends. And she came and had dinner with me at Gopal's, and then we had dinner. And then after dinner, she said, "Oh, do you want to get dessert?" And I said, "Oh, no, I'm not eating sweets for 1 month." And she said to me, she said, "You must really love Krishna if you're doing this." So for her, it was good preaching. You know, so, you know, if we do austerity, it must be for Krishna's pleasure. So when Krishna sees that we're sacrificing for him, then, so what is our main sacrifice? It is to preach Krishna consciousness. When Krishna sees you could be doing so many other things with your time, but no, you're going out and distributing books or doing some preaching, then he becomes very indebted to you. He doesn't forget those things. He never forgets them. Is that okay? Okay. Dhamma Prabhu, did you?
Is the renunciation, it still sounds right. But how about if we find something sometime down the track that would still maintain his desires? And we then choose to take birth again, following those desires?
Yeah, you have to. Jagatrini Mataji made this point a few years ago. She was preaching to one of the devotees. She said, "You have to fulfill your material desires. You have to fulfill them." It means in a regulated way. It means within the boundaries of Krishna consciousness. We know what the boundaries are, but you have to fulfill them, but within the boundaries, like that. Because otherwise, if you get to the end, and then you're like, "Oh, but you know, I still haven't done this," then again, you know, to get it out of your system. So you have to fulfill them. So you know, if you need to, then do whatever you need to do within the limits. Yeah, there are limits. It doesn't mean I go outside and do whatever you do. Because you see devotees do that. They go outside to do that. They get even later in their life. And then they go off and they start doing what we would call nonsense activities. They go off and they do that. Get it out of their system, then they come back. That's not recommended, but you see it happens. And that's what it is. It's all this stuff in the heart which has not come out yet. So you have to fulfill your desires within the boundaries. But then it's up to Krishna whether he's going to fulfill them for you or not. You know, because you're trying. And it's interesting because I just spent a week with some devotees, and one of the devotees, he's broken up with his wife, and you know, he's 50 now, and he was making this point to me that, you know, when he broke up with his wife, he's got three kids. Kids are 18, I don't know, about 21, 18, 16, like that. And you know, it's quite a solid grihastha life. He never thought that it would fall apart, but it did. And he said to me, he said, when it happened, it only happened about 4 or 5 years ago, he said, he really questioned Krishna at that time. "Krishna, why are you doing this? I've done so much for you. I was a temple president. I've done so much preaching in South America. He did so much, you know, preaching to establish our movement. Traveled with Jayapataka Swami as his personal servant for many years and, you know, did so much service, so much preaching. And then Krishna took away something." So he told me, he said, "I really questioned Krishna at that time. It took me, you know, a couple of years to really get around it. Why would Krishna take away something?" But now he says, now I'm starting to appreciate that Krishna maybe had a higher reason for this. So we try to fulfill our material desires within Krishna consciousness, within the boundaries. But then whether that works or not, half the time it doesn't work anyway. So what is the lesson that Krishna is trying to teach every single one of us? Sarvadaman parijaja mam ekam sharanam. Just abandon everything and just surrender to me, and I'll solve all the problems. I'll take you back to Godhead, and you'll be in more bliss than you can even quantify or understand. It's just, but no, you still want to do this, and you still want to do that. Mm-hmm. So sooner or later, we just have to give it up, like that. Does that give any clarity or anything? Okay. So nice to see you here. Usually I have to travel 2,000 kilometres just to get your darshan. So. Yeah, it's our desire. At least if you come here sometimes, it would be a great blessing to us to see the Vaishnavas. So, someone else has a question? Yeah. Or a comment?
Can you have today, Sanatan Goswami, you want to tell us something?
I'll see if anyone has any more questions. Then maybe we can say something. I haven't left time for Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami, you have to speak for many, many hours and days about him. He's...
Just
read the sketch, 5 minutes. Oh, but wait and see. I think someone else had a question. Someone has had a question?
Just a comment. I'm just like,
last question that where you were saying that we have to satisfy material desires, but desires cannot be satisfied. Cannot be satisfied. So not allowed to not be. I mean, but we're not in natural situation. So they actually exist.
No, because it means. Okay, say you like eating sweets, right? I'm not saying you, but I'm saying some people like eating sweets. I like eating sweets. Okay, so I used to eat like 36 gulab jamuns or 27 rasgullas after a feast. Yeah, not before a feast, after a feast. Like a lot of, like that. So then, next day, then you wake up and you think, why the hell did I do that? Right? So then you do it again a week later. Right? And then gradually you get it out of your system. Gradually you get it out of your system. So you, the point is you have to fulfill your material desires. And gradually you'll realize it's not as good as you thought it was. Like that. So you have to do that. Gradually you'll get the realization. But if you try to distance yourself from it prematurely, you say, okay, I'm going to renounce that. But I'm always thinking about it, but I'm going to renounce it. Yeah, like a forbidden apple. That's a good example. So, like, you know, okay, I'm going to renounce that. You know, I'm not going to think about that anymore. You know, I'm not thinking about it. I've renounced it. I don't think about it anymore. Hare Krishna. I'm not thinking about it. It doesn't work. It's artificial. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's mitchacha. It's artificial. You've tried to renounce it, but actually you haven't. So the point is you have to fulfill your desires. And then gradually you'll realize that's what Grihastha Ashram is all about. Right? You've got a desire. Right? So fulfill it in Krishna's service. Right? Associate, you've got a license. Associate with the opposite sex. Have kids. Do the whole thing. And then you wake up when you're about 50 and you think, that was a bit of a waste of time, really. I should just surrender to Krishna. That's the whole point. So you have to get it out of it. That's why Krishna says, Chaturvana, Maya Shushtam, Gunakama. Krishna says, I give you this system. I give you a license. Krishna gave the license. Right? So use the license responsibly. Unless you're genuinely renounced. If you genuinely renounce, then just flag the whole thing. Mm. Just sidestep the whole thing. But if you're not, then fulfill it. They have to follow. There is a system. You know, that means we have material desires, but you have to fulfill them in a cultured setting. It means Vedic culture means you have to fulfill it within that setting. You fulfill, you know, what are the material desires? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That's basically the whole material world, right? No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Okay, so do you want to gamble within Krishna consciousness? Right. Okay, we can have some card games or something. We just, you know, sometimes we play around and we have some games. You know, but we don't like bet money on it or anything like that. So you can, you know, if you want to gamble, you can do something. But you cannot, you can't go outside the boundaries. Intoxication, right? If you want to get intoxicated, take Varuni juice. Then you'll become intoxicated. Right? In the spiritual world, everyone, I'm reading these pastimes at the moment. In the spiritual world, they're drinking a lot of Varuni juice, taking a lot of intoxication, but it's spiritual. Right? So if you want to take intoxication, take it, but you have to take it within Krishna consciousness. Right? Sex life. If you want sex life, it has to be within Krishna consciousness. It has to be to have children. If you want to have sex, that's fine. No problem. But you have to have kids. That's the natural consequence. Right? And then eating meat, right? You can't do that in Krishna consciousness. If you want to take the fat of the animal, you have to take it through dairy, through milk products. And now that's becoming a big problem. Half our movement is becoming vegan now because we're sick of, you know, we're sick of the system. You know, and then we haven't worked out how to supply the, you know, so the whole Kali Yuga is very mixed up. So what's the actual answer? Go back to the spiritual world. Yeah, I've been reading about the spiritual world. I took a week off, so I was reading a lot about the spiritual world in these books. It's incredible up there. It's incredible up there. What's going on? It's incredible. Like, it's just, it's amazing. What's going on up there? That's the answer. And then, what, you know, then I read it all and then I think, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? Huh? The only reason why we're here is to preach Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there's no reason to be here. It's a waste of time. My spiritual master said that to me, actually. I think he said it here in Melbourne. He said to me one time, he said, it's a waste of time. He's talking about Grihastha life. He's encouraging me to be a brahmacari. He said, it's a waste of time. But everything in this world is a waste of time, except Krishna consciousness. That's all. You had a point?
Srila Vishnu, for example, compares sense gratification in Krishna consciousness with the example he gives riding horse. Say, in the beginning, expert horse rider let the horse move a little bit here and there, lose the reins. But he knows the goal. Eventually, he will control the horse. So, it has, he has both balance. Within his long training, so he doesn't divert his breath. At the same time, horse has his little bit of freedom now and then.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah, Prabhupada said to Umapati Swami, one of his very early disciples in late 60s, he said, Krishna consciousness means not too much sense gratification, not too much renunciation in the middle. Don't be too austere. You know, when I was a brahmachari, you know, I used to like only eat sweets once a week. Once a week, I don't eat sweets. And a lot of times I get to Wednesday and I'd fall down. So then next week I'd say, okay, now. Sometimes I'd make it all the way to Sunday. But then by Saturday, all I'm thinking about is like, you know, rasgulla and halva. You know, I was just chanting like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. I just meditate like that. So not too much renunciation. So then I realized better to have a little bit of sweet, just a little bit. Torah, Alpa, Bus, a little bit of sweet. And then on Sunday, okay, you can just let go. Prabhupada said, once a week, feel yourself to the neck, fully satisfied your senses. But then rest of the time you have to control. Prabhupada actually came here in 1972 to Sydney, and the devotees were having halva for lunch, I think it was. Like, big pot of halva. Yeah, they ate other thing, big pot of halva. Prabhupada said, no, he said, no. He said, once a week, you can eat like that. Not every day. Prabhupada's diet was rice, dal, sabji, chapati. Simple. And then once a week, okay. Satisfy your senses. Okay.
My Guru Maharaj gives an example of sense gratification in Krishna consciousness like sand and kheer. So if you mix sand and kheer and then you eat it, it will, you know how it will taste.
It's not so good. I've tried it. It's not so good. My whole life is like that. It's not so good. Okay. I won't have time to speak on Sanatana Goswami because there's too much to say. So it's, today's his disappearance day. If you have time, read about Sanatana Goswami. They're the most powerful acharya. He wrote the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is our seminal Shastra in our Gaudiya tradition. It's the most important. Actually, Lord Chaitanya once said about Sanatana Goswami, he looked at him and said, he is my favorite devotee. Lord Chaitanya said that. He said, he is my favorite devotee. He's the most exalted devotee in our sampradaya. Rupa Goswami considered him, he was his older brother, to be his guru. And the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, all the works of the Goswamis are based on Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which Lord Chaitanya spent 30 days in Varanasi and Benares with Sanatana Goswami instructing him. And then he said, now you write it all down. So he wrote many, many books, Hari Bhakti Vilas and Brihad Bhagavatamrita and many other books, and commentaries on the Bhagavatam, which are extremely important in our sampradaya, in our tradition. I don't have time. It'll take a long time to speak about it. So. Okay, we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki.